morning.
Good morning. Richard Lechick for the appellant. I'll reserve 3 minutes.
Three?
Yes. Mr. Barzee was convicted of felony harassment of his ex-girlfriend, and the jury found that this was an aggravated domestic violence offense. In its instruction on whether the state met its burden to prove this aggravator, the jury was instructed that it had to find an ongoing pattern of abuse, and this meant that there were multiple instances of abuse over a prolonged period of time. And then it defined prolonged period of time to mean more than a few weeks. The state properly concedes that this is a comment on the evidence. In analyzing the prejudice, the standard we apply is that judicial comments are presumed to be prejudicial and that the burden is on the state to show that the defendant was not prejudiced, unless the record affirmatively shows that no prejudice could have resulted. So the question is, in this case, has the state met this burden? And the answer is no. So in the cases that I've actually found that this high standard has been met, what's usually common is that the issue has not been contested. And in this case, the issue was highly contested. If we look at the hearing on the aggravator, we see that defense attorney proffered a number of arguments to persuade the jury that the state had not met its burden to prove this aggravator beyond a reasonable doubt. One argument was that there had been a significant period where there had been no abuse. So from about 2011 to about 2013, mid-2013, there was no evidence of abuse, according to the testimony. So he argued that given this sort of period of time where nothing had happened, and there was also evidence of a earlier period where nothing had really happened, the state hadn't met its burden to show that this was a prolonged period.
Was there a period of time where he conceded abuse had occurred?
Well, so this occurred after he'd already been found guilty of the offense, so the jury had already found him guilty of the offense, so, and also of a couple other offenses.
Did his counsel concede in his argument that there was a period where Mr. Barzee engaged in abusive conduct?
I don't think counsel conceded anything. I mean,
let's
take it
another step. Is there a period of time where he did not dispute abusive conduct occurred?
I don't think he conceded or I think he disputed. I mean, I think he held the state to its burden of proof and didn't concede anything. I mean, he argued
I'm
that.
I'm talking about the facts of this particular crime, but his history of abuse. He had some criminal history. It wasn't just allegations. Was there a period of time where it was undisputed he engaged in abusive conduct?
My recollection is that defense counsel, so at this hearing, there was a number of convictions for violations of a no-contact order, which were admitted, and his argument was that you can't really read much into these convictions because it just means that he contacted her, and it could have been a consensual sort of contact, and it doesn't necessarily show abuse. So this was another argument that he was using to persuade the jury that the state had not met its burden to prove this offense or this aggravator beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, I think this case is actually more like the Brush case than the state would have this court believe. In Brush, there was evidence of 2 months of abuse prior to the current offense. And in this case, what we have is evidence of a threat occurring about 3.5 months before this offense. So that what the jury could look at, you know, they'd be in the jury room and they'd look at this instruction and they say, oh, well, we've convicted Mr. Barzee of this offense. We have evidence that he made a threat against his ex-girlfriend about 3 months later. You know, defense counsel has made this argument about a lapse of a period of time. But, you know, who cares? Because we have this instruction that says a prolonged period of time means more than a few weeks. It's been more than a few weeks since this conviction in July 2014. That's about 3.5 months. The end. We don't have to think about what, you know, defense counsel's argument about the no contact orders. We don't have to really, you know, inquire. So absolutely, the state cannot show that the record affirmatively shows that no prejudice could have resulted. You know, this is a high standard. This is, I think this is about close to as structural error as we can get. I think it's greater than proof beyond a harmless beyond a reasonable doubt standard, where you can look at overwhelming prejudice in the record and determine an error is harmless. In this case, the state has to show, it has to prove that nothing in the record could have prejudiced Mr. Barzi. So I don't have to really show anything. The state has to show that no prejudice could have resulted, and the state can't meet its burden to do that. So this court should reverse the exceptional sentence and remand, and I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. You'll have 4 minutes.
Good morning. If it may please the court, I'm Ian Eath, representing the state of Washington, respondent in this matter. I'll talk about the instructional error, I guess, and if you want to talk about the other issues, I'd be happy to. The state is asking this court to affirm the conviction of Mr. Barzi because the instructional error resulted in no prejudice, because no one would realistically find an 8-year history of abuse to not be a prolonged period of time. And contrary to Mr. Barzi's characterizations just now, this was not a contested issue at trial. And I'll start out by pointing out and encouraging your honors to go back and look at the record. At what has been labeled as 5 RP 788 in the closing remarks of defense, the defense did indeed address the fact that there were these temporal breaks in the abuse, but they never contested that the abuse had begun in 2006. And I will read you a quote, which is from the defense in addressing these temporal breaks. She concludes, quote, this is the attorney for Mr. Barzi, quote, "This is not an ongoing pattern of abuse because there had been a break in the relationship," end quote. What the defense was contesting here is not that this was a prolonged period, but that a temporal break meant that it wasn't a pattern. So the issue of whether this abuse had begun 8 years prior and had continued over time leading up to the felonious harassment of the victim was never an issue at trial. And the reason why that's important is because this puts this squarely within the confines of State v. Levy. And this is the case, as you're well aware of, where the jury was instructed that an apartment is a building. And this was plainly harmless because no one, as the court in Levy found, no one could realistically conclude, first, that a revolver is not a deadly weapon, and an apartment is not a building, a specifically named person is not someone other than the defendant, and jewelry is not personal property. In Brush, the Supreme Court allowed that this is an error that can be found harmless. It allowed for that possibility, as long as the state meets its burden of showing, your honors, that that's true. And in the situation where the defense in Mr. Barzi's case did not even contest that this had begun in 2006, 8 years prior, no one could realistically conclude, no reasonable jury could realistically conclude that 8 years is not a prolonged period of time. Now, there's other cases where this has been found to not be harmless, and one of them is Becker. And so I'll just mention that because it's sort of a contrast. In Becker, the instructional element at issue was that the court had defined an educational program as a school for purposes of the drug dealing within the school zone enhancement. And the court found, well, maybe it seems obvious that an educational program was a school, but maybe not, because this was actually contested. This was pretty hotly contested. But here, I again would remind you to go back and look at the record, that Mr. Barzi never claimed that this abuse had not occurred as far back as 2006. Mr. Barzi never argued to the jury that there was not a prolonged period of time, not once. What Mr. Barzi argued to the jury was that it wasn't a pattern, that it wasn't was not an ongoing pattern. And he also argued that you couldn't buy into or take very much evidence from the fact that the no contact orders in the prior convictions had been issued against this very same victim. He argued that you couldn't gather any history of abuse from those bare records. never talked about the prolonged period of time. Now, I really don't have much else to say about that. If you have any questions about that or on any of the other issues, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
So the state identified the issue for the jury. Your question is whether or not this went on for longer than a few weeks. That is exactly the problem. So, you know, defense counsel, he's looking at the same instruction as everybody else. So he's probably going to, you know, focus his arguments on the other aspects. So that explains why he didn't exactly hone on the prolonged period of time. Now, in terms of Levy, that case, it was uncontested. The issue was uncontested under whether the apartment was a building. This is completely different. And I would encourage this court to look at State v. Jackman, which isn't cited in the briefing. But in that case, the error related to the age of the victims, and they had included the birth dates in the instruction. And in that case, the Supreme Court held there was a comment on the evidence, and that it reversed, despite no evidence in the record that the defendant had challenged that these were the dates of the children. And it said, it is still conceivable that the jury could have determined that the boys were not minors at the time of the events. So, you know, it's conceivable that the jury, looking at this instruction, would have just convicted Mr. Barzi, you know, not fully considered what it had to do and not held the state to its burden, just looking at this instruction.
So is the appellant's position that because it was a contested issue that we as the reviewing court cannot find it harmless beyond a reasonable doubt? Or do we look at all the evidence the jury had and make that determination?
Well, the standard is not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. So you look at everything, but I mean, you look at everything to see, does the record affirmatively show that the defendant could not have been prejudiced? So is it impossible that the prejudice was...
This, although commenting on the evidence is a constitutional error, that we use a different harmless error standard than we do for every other constitutional right violation?
That's correct, and I look at State v. Levy, and that's
it. Just a question of semantics. Is the court really articulating something greater than beyond a reasonable doubt?
I think it's different than mere semantics. It's a state constitution.
That's the highest burden of proof known in any legal proceeding.
Well, I encourage the court to look at the opinion of State v. Levy, where they go over the standard, and then they cite cases, and they look at the standard, and it says, and if it's the same standard, I don't know why the Supreme Court is using different language. So I think they've rejected the harmless beyond the reasonable doubt standard, and under that standard, you would look at overwhelming evidence in the record. We don't see this type of analysis in any of the common of the evidence cases. I mean, we have an analysis where, you know, is it conceivable that the jury could have use this comment, is it conceivable that he could have been prejudiced? I mean, so this is an extremely high standard. It's based on a state constitutional right. So I'd encourage the court to look at State v. Levi or Levy, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, and Jackman. And I think those cases show a contrast to Becker, which is the primary case that the state relies on. And I think this case really is analogous to Brush. So, you know, there was evidence that there was domestic violence on early on in their relationship. But by the time of this offense, they had broken up. They were no longer in a relationship. She was his ex-girlfriend. And there was evidence of about 3.5 months earlier before this offense that he had made a threat. So the jury would look at this and conclude, well, that's longer than 3 weeks. The aggravators met. The courts told us this. So I think the state has not met its high burden to show that the record affirmatively shows that no prejudice could have resulted. So this court should reverse the exceptional sentence and remand.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our next case this morning is Lowe versus Ben.